This is the second full day together. I'll just give a brief review of yesterday with the instructions and then follow on with regard to the practices for today, and Tino will also speak with you as well. So yesterday with the instructions, the priority was given to the four postures: sitting, walking, standing and reclining. All very familiar in the human experience, and each and every one of them providing plenty of opportunity for us to keep in touch with our experience, develop training of focus, mindfulness, seeing clearly, responding to, and therefore we bring real value to these formations of the body: sitting, walking, standing and reclining. With the primary emphasis yesterday, was on the breathing experience, specifically with the sitting time. And in this contact with the breath, it's not a cutting off or detachment from the world. In fact, it's actually a reminder of our intimacy with it. Can't last more than 2 or 3 minutes without breathing in and breathing out, as an example. So we engage in the breath. It's a rather helpful, precious bridge to bringing some harmony to body and mind, and a well-adjusted, integrated human being experiences this as a rather primary experience, a genuine sense of harmony and integration of the whole being, and our attention and care with the breath really supports this. And sometimes, here and elsewhere, it just takes one or two mindful in-breaths and out-breaths just to remind us to be grounded, to be centered, and to feel a real, genuine, authentic sense of presence. And the mindfulness of the breathing, of course, it's a practice, it's a training, it's not easy. But in that also might require from us some experiment. And what I mean by that is we may wish to make the breath longer and deeper. And sometimes we just need to bring more oxygen into the body to really connect the breathing experience with the physical, biological experience. Sometimes with our attention to the breath, it may well be a reminder that life is a regularity of events coming and going, and breath comes and it goes. And it stays for a while and it passes out. And life is one of things go, that makes way and makes space for something new or fresh or different to arise. So being in harmony and in tune with life is being deeply familiar with the dynamics of life. Things arise, they stay, and they pass. More closely, you and I, we arise, we stay, and we pass. The day arises, it stays, and it passes. This is life. No picnic. Not a holiday camp. This is it. We have some facing up to do sometimes. We can get lost in superficial realities, and we aren't prepared for the movements of life. And the training and the exploration here is to really meet life. If you know it well and deeply, frankly, it's a tiger without teeth. If we don't, good luck. So the sitting period itself, walk in, we sit, we stay, it finishes, we get out of the posture, it arose, started, stayed for a while, and passed. In that, and I'd like to speak to you a little bit about this in terms of the physical pain that is experienced by some people, in fact, including myself, so I'll include that in a minute or two. So, we might be sitting for a while. There is the fact, but it's metaphor as well. So we're sitting and then we begin to experience some discomfort, some pain in the body. The discomfort we find we can accommodate. Wherever that part or locations, plural, might be in the body, we can accommodate it. And you could be the Buddha of the Buddhas, and you can still experience discomfort in the body, and you can still experience pain in the body. And with that, we're sitting, and we notice that, whether we're with the breath, or as we will do today, give more attention to the whole body experience. And Tina, during the day, we'll offer a body scan meditation. With the mindfulness of the body, if there is a location, let's take some of the favorites. The knees are one of the popular areas for pain in the sitting posture. Not the only location, anywhere can be. So it's very easy to get into the pattern of either avoiding or denying, or resistance and fighting it, trying to control it. Neither will work. This is a hopeless strategy for dealing with pain. Resisting and fighting, getting stressed and tense about it, not only makes it problematic for the mind, but also it intensifies the pain in the body. Never underestimate what tightness and tension in the mind can do to the body. And where there's a vulnerable area, example, pain in the knee, that the resistance and the tension and trying to control puts pressure on the pain. So it's like trying to put a fire out with petrol. And we do it again and again. We are slow learners. So the relaxation, it is not easy, but it's intelligent. The relaxation of the mind and the practices of relaxing the mind, say with the breathing, the relaxed state of being is then quietly to turn the attention to that location where there is the pain and to experience that area. That might mean experiencing initially the outer edges of it, quietly moving towards the epicenter of it. And the key to relaxation and a skillful relationship to pain is that you will still be able to notice changes going on in the pain. It's not one block of pain. It can't be. Changes are going on. If there isn't resistance, we're quietly exploring that area, we will keep noticing changes which are going on. As you get closer to it, so to speak, that area of pain may intensify. Be prepared for it. If you want to get close to something, if you want to put the fire out, you have to get close to it. And in that, there you may reduce the pain to throbbing, strong sensations, and you just see the ebb and the flow. more changes going on in the body, so the pain begins to diminish into strong sensations. Obviously, there is no guarantee. It might be the wise thing, you've looked at the pain, it's still intense, your knee or wherever is really, really hurting, we still have the privilege. You move. Pretty simple. Sometimes in life, some, and you will know very well, do not have that privilege, that there is no posture which relieves the pain. Sometimes with injury, with violence, with health, and much more, it's not going to go away. Still, however, in this body of teachings and practices, the mind does not have to suffer over the pain in the body. It does not have to bring about stress, despair, unhappiness in the mind, in the heart. It does not have that power. But it takes a practice to be calm, to be clear, to be connected with the pain, with the issue there, and it not have the impact on us of bringing about despair, worry, and anxiety. We can do it. We're human. We've got the potential. But it's going to take practice. It's about practice. Sometimes, with the working with the pain that comes, it might be a regular area. So I'm going to go to the personal example here. There. So I'm tempted to use the passage of age as an excuse. It's a good one, but it's still an excuse. So just take the formation of how I'm sitting right now, like plenty of you. In this case, the left leg is on the foot going inside, the right leg is on the outside. This is more comfortable. When it's around the other way, left leg on the outside and the on the inside. This is on the inside there. There's a little few square centimeters here, which, ouch, there. So sometimes I have it round the other way. I want to get to the point here. And there's a general consensus amongst us that the body ages equally evenly. It's a fiction. I can tell you. I've worked it out roughly. This leg is approximately 7 years older than this leg. This is not theory. This is pure first-hand experience. Sort of. Right. So when he's coming to ring the bell, the gong, Tina, I ring the gong. Now, there are some people in the hall that the last 10 minutes is the meditator's equivalent of hell on earth. And desperately waiting for the gong to ring. There are some people who didn't realize until they came on a retreat that they believed in God, because they start praying to God, who they don't believe in, for the end of the sitting to arise. And some people start praying to know God, because it's better than nothing. So there, just to get through these last few minutes there. The moments, if you're of the end of the sitting period, it's an ending. And those moments can be valuable in the quality of what we see in our attention. And what I mean by that is, there can be pressure in the mind. Oh, when is it going to be over? He, she, they've forgotten. They got lost in some deep samadhi. They're in a big daydream, etc. I'm sure this sitting has been going on for at least an hour and a half already, or whatever. All this is going on in the mind. that are there. And then finally one hears the gong. And there is such a relief. It's over there. And with the relief that it's over, there's calm in the mind, and the pain in the body can go down dramatically, and the thought even arises, I could keep sitting. Before it was hell, and now it's heaven. And it has nothing to do with the ringing of the gong. If the gong relieved you of suffering, I'd be ringing it all day, I promise. All right. So we want to be mindful of that shift. And is there any shift in the feeling? Is there any shift in the mood? Is there any shift in the change that goes on? Just to recognize that coming to an end, what's our relationship to it? And if we're carrying in life rather a lot of fears in life about something ending, and not just a simple event called meditation, but a lot of fears in life, those fears will arise, and with those fears which are arising, it's going to make any ending, any finishing, very, very difficult. Because the fears will bear their fruit when the fear meets the fact. That's very difficult for people. Not realizing we are kind of sowing the seeds through the fear. And therefore, part of our practice is, can I, in our sitting, in our walking, catch ourselves if there is some agitation and just be able to see, can I just calmly take it, in this case, moment to moment, step by step, and when I arrive at this situation, I will know that the calm and the practice is a support, a precious support, to be able to deal with the situation when it comes. I'll attend to it when it comes. And I'm not going to live in fear of what I haven't yet experienced. I'm going to prepare myself. And that's a key feature of the practice. Because sometime in life, you and I have to be really, really prepared. Really prepared. And if we're not, it's going to be rough. So our sitting, as I mentioned to you, is a fact, but it's a metaphor for beginning, middle, and end. Similarly, at the beginning of the sitting, but in another way. Sometimes in life, we wish to start something, whatever it might be. We wish to start something. It's a lovely idea, it's beautiful, it's precious, it's creative, many, many ways to do this. But then, we wish to start, and then we're fiddling around, never getting something really underway. It's a lovely idea. Everybody but our parents say, go for it. No, sometimes parents also, they're very sweet. Must be some around. And in that, we start, and it happens with the posture. Some people can spend 5 or 10 minutes or longer trying to make their posture perfect before they begin their practice. My hands in the right place. Maybe a bit higher. Maybe my neck. Do I look like a Buddha? Am I impressing people? Etc. So all of this fiddling around is going on there. And we're halfway through the meditation. The person hasn't actually started because they want to look like Sid, that means Siddhartha, behind us. Are we one of those people? Great idea, putting it off, trying to do lots of other little things around it, flirting with it, but never getting to it. And then there are others. Remember the sitting meditation, walking, all metaphors as well. We start something. Yes, the energy is there. Yeah, I'm really committed to this. I'm dedicated. I'm sure I'm going to be a Buddha by Friday morning. And so all of this is going on inside us. And then in the middle period, some other little pattern creeps up there. Doubt. Why am I doing this? What's the point? Just because the tradition is 2,600 years old and people are still practicing like they do, so what? Doesn't mean to say it's going to be any good for me, etc. Why did I come here? I could be outside in the cold or being miserable at work or something else. You know, all this going on in the mind and it's watering down something which might be of value. Because the mind has got doubts. The mind is losing its way. Is there anything going on in our life where we're kind of losing our way with something beautiful and precious and deep and important and worth nourishing and supporting and sustaining? And if so, name it. If so, be clear about it. If so, could this practice just help to move through and keep steady with that? We started it, yes. Our heart's wish is to sustain it, yes. And we wish to see the benefits of it, yes. And whatever that might be about, and even if it's related to another human being that we love, there's no guarantee she or he or the employer, whoever, will stay with us. But we know that there's the value of our intention, of our willingness to start, to stay steady with and to follow through with. We're staying true to that. And therefore I say the day can be a really valuable process for us of insight and understanding about how we live our life. Same kind of principle with the walking, standing and reclining. Sometimes, understandably, people will be here in the hall, sitting, and then leave the hall there. And some people will wander off into the bathroom and look in the mirror. Why anybody, especially at my age, would want to look at the mirror in the mirror any age for so long for? What's the point? Etc. And especially at 6 o'clock, which must be positively the worst time of the day to look in the mirror anyway, but people still do. It could trigger a very bad start to the day. Anyway, all right, so we get the point. So rather than trying to find a relationship with what you see in the mirror, trying to find a relationship with the whole being, in this case, the whole walking experience. The suffering over body image is just immense. It's tragic, tragic. How distant, detached, cut off, that the image matters so much to us that we're losing the sense of being with and listening. And Dina will be speaking to you with diet and body and mindfulness in due course. And to really give care and attention to the whole connection there. And then do make full use, that's the invitation today, of the four postures. If at some time you're tired for all sorts of reasons, not sleeping very well, putting out a lot of energy, their stress from the work, home environment, the time of the month, just a person who doesn't sleep very well, and much, much more. If you need, just take some extra rest. And if you are sharing a room with another, do please be mindful that she or he is needing some extra time. So one respectfully, kindly walks into the room and walks out very quietly, out of consideration for the person who's just needing some extra time to take rest. So all of that is part of the whole process here of really listening to oneself in the rhythms of the day. And finally, just a couple of words here. Just a brief reminder, a little bit of the theme of the talk yesterday evening there. And one is on aspect of it was the identity, the roles as well included in that we have. And it might be that there are some roles or identities that we have in the flow of the daily life and genuinely requiring some more care and attention. And one kind of golden rule in this is do not take anybody in this world for granted. Do not think living in a habit and taking somebody for granted that they will want to stay around. It's not relationships with whoever. It's not about work. I have to work on my relationship. It's not about work at all. It's about love. And what human beings deeply appreciate in life, all of us, and I think we can say with no exception, what human beings appreciate in life is to feel loved and to feel understood. And that requires some reflection. What ways in daily life can I contribute to the love of the other, to an understanding of the other? And that's worthy of reflection, because that's what we wish for ourselves. And since we wish that for ourselves, surely let's wish it and enable it for others as well. And those deep virtues of the human being, the deep realizations of the human being, are a genuine challenge, but it brings the best out of us. And love and understanding brings the best out of others. So our day there, and sometimes that's around roles and identity that we have. And also the encouragement was also given to recognize, which we sometimes forget, that we are not always in the role. We are not always in a state of identity, and there's some reminder with the guided meditation yesterday. So when we're not in the role of the father, the mother, the employer, the employee, the student, the teacher, and all that other kind of roles that we have, sometimes we're in no role, no special role. And in the absence of that, to really recognize and support and appreciate that nobody is in a role 24/7. Nobody. Not possible. The roles are there when we are engaged with the others. And the roles are there when we're doing something on behalf of. But there's plenty of times when you and I are simply not in the role. They are precious times. And if we can get some renewal and nourishment in the times when we're not in these major roles of our life, that renewal and nourishment will bring something beautiful out of the human being, and we call this love. and that deep aspect of the exploration that's going on here. I made reference as well to The Outsider, Camus, Mr. Meursault, the central figure in that, and as was pointed out to me yesterday evening, sometimes I understand in the German it's translated as the stranger, but I think the word the outsider is a little bit more precise. And there's some encouragement or reminder, we do not always have to feel connected. There are plenty of things I have no wish to be connected with. Currently it's called the British government, but there are plenty of other areas as well. And sometimes one appreciates just being an outsider. And in being an outsider and not feeling connected to something specific, it provides a bit more space to look in fresh ways. And therefore, there is a value to not feeling connected into or with. And that giving ourselves some space, being the outsider, might, as Camus insisted upon, even in this circumstance of the novel itself, that the person, even though there's violence and detachment and being cut off and much more, but there is a value there of being true to something in what he felt and thought and staying steady with it. And that's a key feature. Camus even described it in the most bold language. He said, almost as a Christ-like figure who refused to play the game of the politics and the religion of the time and stayed true to something else. And this is one of the aspects of values of being the outsider at times, and at times being deeply connected, and to really see that both of those have a place in our life. And all of that is part of our exploration here. Thanks for listening. Would you like to say? Thank you, Tina.
Two more points.